For our nightly coronavirus update with Dr. Henry Nyman, PhD. Quick headlines for you. Dr. Fauci says coronavirus won't ever be eradicated. Now, we've talked about that on this program before. It certainly looks to be an endemic virus from here on out. Indigenous, if you want to use that word as well. He's also getting a lot of heat from some quarters about his comments saying that New York City is the model on how to fight the coronavirus. It's a matter of opinion, obviously. Rand Paul says lockdowns were a big mistake and have done very little to impact the overall progress of the virus. There's some very good material there. And you go down to the larger section, and there's even more. Henry sent a story. Potent neutralizing antibodies directed to multiple epitopes on SARS-CoV-2 spike. Now, I'm sure you all understood that thoroughly, so we'll just have Henry fill in the blanks there. 70% of California coronavirus cases are people under the age of 49 now. 70%. Governor Newsom says that California sees a record-breaking number of new coronavirus cases. A lot of people think that that may have just something to do with the fact that there's a lot of illegal entrants who have come across the border and have certainly added to the case pool one way or the other. Then it gets really crazy. I won't even go into some of this. We mentioned last night that the Raleigh, North Carolina school year will begin at home, not in the classroom. Same old story. We've been telling you that, too, for a long time. Department of Homeland Security is afraid that masks will make facial recognition useless. There's an interesting angle to take a look at. Okay, and finally, more people contract coronavirus from family members than outside contacts. Things we've said before. Oh, here's one more. Yale epidemiologist says that hydroxychloroquine could save 100,000 lives if it was widely deployed immediately. Welcome back, Henry. Lots of things for you to comment on here, and then things that I didn't even come close to getting to. Well, how's it going?
It's going well. Things are still developing. I actually just sent you over breaking news. I don't know. I just heard it. I'm not sure. It might have happened.
To get it in. But, I managed to get it in the news. Thank you. I got it.
The White House cafeteria worker.
Yep.
Is COVID positive. So they... They seem to get a lot of virus in the White House. Well, I don't know. It sounds like they were just alerted today. So got a little bit of incubation time. So not going to show up on any tests for several days.
Right.
So we'll see. It's the Ike's Eatery, I guess, at the Eisenhower Executive Office Building.
Is that what they call it? Ike's Eatery?
Yeah, I got Eisenhower Executive. Yeah. I like Ike. Yeah, that was the slogan back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they called Eisenhower. Anyway, the new executive office building has also been temporarily closed. And I sent out an email saying there's no reason for panic or alarm, which is a sure indication that you should be panicked and alarmed.
Yes.
But anyway,
yes.
We'll see how that develops. That just happened this afternoon, I guess. CNN had a story.
That's a big story.
They saw the email or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a newsmaker.
So we'll see. I mean, you know, if somebody's positive in the kitchen, that's not the best place to find the virus, if you recall. As similar things happened in SARS 17 years ago, where chefs were associated with being super spreaders and didn't necessarily have to be direct contact with the chef if you went to the restaurant.
Does that mean that people were eating the virus and becoming infected? Is that what you're saying? What are we saying?
Well, if you can breathe it in and get it infected, you can eat some food that's not mm-hmm. been cooked since he coughed on it and get infected. I mean, it's not that hard to envision how that would happen. You know, basically, the virus gets killed by cooking, but if he coughs as he's putting the final touches on your meal.
Little extra seasoning, is that what you're saying?
That would be live virus, right? That wouldn't necessarily, you know, die off that quickly. And if you eat it, I mean, if you recall back in the day when before people wore goggles and were culling H5N1, they ended up, actually, the big event was H7N7 back in the Netherlands, and the cullers wore PPEs, but no goggles, and about 100 of them got infected by that virus, and they even passed it on to some of their family members. That was avian influenza. It was H7N7. But in any event, So it can go in through, you know, the point is that it can go in through your eyes and, you know, it can go in through your mouth as easily as it can go in through your nose. So it's, as long as it gets in, it moves about in this particular virus, but it's probably basic cleavage site kind of can move around a lot of different cell types. But anyway, back to the story, you know, Trump had another one of his briefings today, and actually, you know, it was somewhat like yesterday. It was relatively brief. It was even less than a half an hour. Again, it was just Trump. He read pretty much the whole presentation was reading from prepared remarks, and he took a limited number of questions. Not many of them were actually on the virus, because he didn't really say anything on the virus that much.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of a controlled, it's really a made-for-TV presentation, if you will. He has prepared remarks. He noted that seniors in Florida were getting infected, and so he said, "Yeah, we're on this," as if there was a whole lot that you can do after the fact. But it's mostly wishing them hopes and prayers. I mean, if you look at it analytically, it's really pathetic. I mean, he's basically giving words of encouragement for people that just got infected by a virus.
Who's behind these briefings, do you think? Debbie Birx? She's putting them together? Probably, huh?
No. She did her own she did her own conference call today, and it was night and day. I mean, Trump was saying, "You know, we got things under control. It's not too bad. Got this problem down in Florida with seniors. We hope they get better. We're thinking of them, and you know, stick it in there. You didn't really deserve this." And you know, he basically, seniors aren't getting infected in a lot of other countries that kind of got exposed to this virus before we did. And so he kind of gave encouragement there, and then he made a few remarks on the schools. He kind of ignored that yesterday. So
Right. Today
he said, "Oh, we got to get everybody back to school." And, you know, they've looked at children and they really don't get that sick and they don't transmit that well. So there's really no reason you can't open up all the schools. And that was
Who's
about it. I mean, that was his analysis. And, You know, there's a lot of problems with that if you think about it. Number one, there's the issues with the children, and some develop rashes, some have damaged lungs when they're asymptomatic, and so the fact that they're not showing disease doesn't mean that they don't have damage. There's an example I mentioned yesterday from the child in Guangdong province. The only reason they looked at him is because his family had been infected. He was asymptomatic. Most cases, they will not look at somebody asymptomatic. They won't even be at the doctor. They won't even know about. I mean, there's nothing to know about other than their contacts. And, and so, you know, how widespread that type of damage is pretty much unknown, because asymptomatic people don't see the doctor. They don't get CT scans of their lungs, and they don't know that there is any issue. And if they find out down the road, they don't really know what it's from. So so there's that group, and of course with the younger kids, the idea that they're going to keep masks on all day at school is
not a chance.
Is another fantasy. Yeah, so that's not going to happen. And then the high school there, like I've been predicting, I'm going to stick with this. I think there's more and more indications that these guys, they're going back to school in middle school and high school. I don't think they'll get past a month at the most as far as having in-class sessions that, they're trying to do sports. I kind of see it here in Pittsburgh. And, you know, these guys, they got signs up that says, you know, wear a mask, keep 6 feet, lots of signs on lots of doors. But nobody wearing a mask at the practice other than the instructors. none of the athletes are wearing masks, and they're the ones running around huffing and puffing. And, these kids are going to be infected long before school starts. And by the time school starts, I mean, they're doing temperature checks now. You got to check in, check your temperature before you go out onto the field. And when school opens up, they're not going to get past the front door, but, you know, some of them aren't going to have a fever, and they are going to get past the front door. And they're going to see how many don't get past the front door on the opening day of school, and they'll say, this looks like it might be a problem. And then, you know, more people develop fevers in school and go to the nurse. And whether they'll actually have testing available, I don't know. That's the other reason you can't really open up the schools, is you don't have the testing available. I mean, they should have testing. Although when they have testing, you get what you have with the football teams. The NFL is cutting back on its preseason and cutting down its rosters, and pretty soon they'll be cutting back on the schedule, and pretty soon the season will be over. There's no way the NFL is going to get any season and then end up throwing in the towel. But so he didn't really address that type of problem that, you know, how many people, students are going to be affected going in. And then the most absurd school policy he had was to say he's going to deport the foreign students at college. And that whole thing didn't make any sense because, I mean, by the time you go to college, it's not like you need, you know, meals at school, and it's not that you need, your parents can't go to work because they don't have any child care. You're 18 years old. There's nobody, there's no difference whether you go to class or whether you, take classes online. Pretty much every college requires you to have a computer, access to a computer. And so that's not a barrier. So the idea that you got to go in class for college to keep the economy going is just pure fantasy. I mean, there's no logic to it. And unfortunately, that's Trump's entire policy. There's no logic. He's just trying to figure out what'll help him in his election. And that's why, you know, we lead the world in cases and deaths. And, your comments on how the Northeast went, I mean, that's the model. I mean, if you don't see that, you're arguing over that, you're lost from the get-go. I mean, the Northeast got the virus under control. I mean, New York had, two deaths yesterday. New York's a big state. It's got a lot of people. Two confirmed deaths is a very low number. They got the virus under control. They locked things down. You'd always see pictures of, you know, the main streets of New York or Manhattan that would be largely empty at live shots at 6 or 7 in the morning. There was very little activity, and they got the virus under control, and it's still pretty much under control. And that's part of the reason the curves don't look as bad as they really are, because if you take out the tri-state area and show the rest of the country, you see that the cases went up dramatically. You see that the deaths are going up. Trump's still using the old numbers when the deaths went down, and he stopped paying any attention to this. The deaths have gone up. So yesterday got up to over 1,000. Today it's about 10% higher, went up over 1,100. Still counting, probably get up to about 1,200 a day. So the deaths are on the rise. The number of cases are on the rise. The countries in Europe have the virus under control. The countries in Asia have the virus under control. The idea that they're coming across the border from Mexico is, from what I can tell, is, pure fantasy. The virus in northern Mexico isn't even the same virus. It's in Southern California. Southern California's got the Italian lineage. The Italian lineage is all over the U.S. That's just causing all the outbreaks. That's not even in the northern part of Mexico anyway. So, the idea that people are coming into the U.S. is just nuts. People are trying to keep the U.S. out of their borders. Canada thinks it's great that there's limitations on crossing the border. They don't want any Americans coming in. Mexico doesn't want any Americans coming in. Europe doesn't want any Americans coming in. I think the number of countries that you can go to from America is a handful in the entire world. And so, anybody that thinks that the virus is coming in now to the U.S. is just, la la land. I mean, the virus, there's more virus in the U.S. than any place in the world. There's more deaths than any place in the world. And it's not because people are coming across the border now. It's because people flew into the United States in February. And they flew in from both Asia and Europe. And nobody was being tested who came in from Europe. And that's where the Italian lineage came from. And that's what's throughout the entire country. It's pretty much throughout the world. But it's not that highly concentrated in northern Mexico. It might be now, but I checked it out about a month ago or so. And the sequences from Mexico were the ORF8 strain, not the Italian lineage. And the virus is causing the problem in Southern California, is the Italian lineage. So in any event, the situation is, it's quickly deteriorating. You wouldn't get it from Trump's briefing because it was pretty brief. And like I say, most of the questions weren't on the virus from the press. And he didn't really take that many. He only took four or five questions from the press. And it was over in less than 30 minutes. But the real story was, Deborah Birx. Did a conference call. And the reason she did a conference call is she was notifying, I don't know who's at the other end. It might have been mayors, it might have been governors, might have been a combination. But she was issuing a warning. She said that there were 11 cities in the U.S. where the levels of virus was rising quickly, and that those cities were of concern. I don't have the list in front of me, but I know that Pittsburgh and Cleveland were both two of the 11 cities that were named. And I know what's going on in Pittsburgh. The numbers are going up pretty steadily, and Pittsburgh pretty much was not heavily hit at all when Eastern Pennsylvania was hit, and now Eastern Pennsylvania is getting out of under control, and Western Pennsylvania is kind of getting out of control. Several days ago, half of the cases in Pennsylvania were in Allegheny County, which is where Pittsburgh is, and 2 days ago they had over 300 cases in Allegheny County alone, which was an all-time.
Dr. Coleman. And then I vanished. And anyway, I'm not a tech, so I don't know. But we are back, and I'm on the phone right now, at least momentarily, till we can get Verizon to hook up. Oh, there, it looks like it. Okay, I'm getting audio, but I'm not. Hold on. Let me try this.
There we go. All right. Okay. I think we got it back. Do we have it back? No, we don't. We've lost audio. Henry, say something.
I can hear you. I can hear you.
Okay,
do you
hear
me?
Now I got you. Yes, I do. All right. We'll assume it works now. Anyway, apologies. So let's get right back to business here. Where were we? If you can remember that, you get $10.
Okay, yeah. Well, I think you heard up to Pittsburgh and one of the 11 cities, but we can move on. I was just going to hit highlights. Quick review of today's results. Like I said, it went over 1,000 deaths again and almost 70,000 cases. Let's see what the total was. The total was 68,407, and it's probably a little bit more from California. But the one aspect is out standing here, is notable is that the deaths are increasing. Yesterday, I got over 1,000 for the first time since June 10th. And today it's at 1155, with probably a few more from California. Texas set a record. They had 197 deaths today. California was probably close to their record. They had 156. And Florida probably was close to their record. They had 140. So those three leading states are leading in the deaths. And, you know, as predicted, the deaths were a trailing indicator. So the lower deaths was just due to the fact that all these new cases were in the hospital but hadn't been sick long enough to die and to, you know, start driving that number up. That number will continue to rise because the number of cases rose. And then the other ones that are waiting in the wings that had more than 50 deaths today were Louisiana had 60, Georgia had 81, Arizona had 56, Alabama had 60, South Carolina had 64. So, you know, that was pretty easy to see the geography there. All of the states with 50 or more actually are in the South with the, you know, if you count California, and actually most of the deaths in California are in the Los Angeles County as well as San Diego County. So it is in the southern part of California where the deaths are there. So that's kind of the death situation. Switching to the potential good news was the paper I sent over. This paper just came out in Nature today. It was fast-tracked. It was submitted just over a month ago, and so it got reviewed and, you know, set up for prime time and was published today. So it was fast-tracked. And it's kind of in my kind of area. It's on monoclonal antibodies. And it's a study that was done with a group out in New York. And they basically screened antibodies from patients who had recovered from COVID. And okay. They actually were cases that were fairly serious, and they collected the blood from five patients, and they screened it for the ability to neutralize the virus. So neutralizing means that they take those antibodies, mix it with the virus, and see if that reduces the number of viral particles that grows from the infection. If it's okay, neutralizing, it keeps the virus from getting into the cells, and the viral level does not increase. If they don't neutralize, it does. So they compare how much virus there is in the presence of the antibodies. And then it was a fairly sophisticated operation. I used to make monoclonal antibodies all the time. Mine were actually pretty simple. This is a little bit more sophisticated. But the basic idea of the monoclonal antibodies, when I did it, I would take whatever I wanted the antibodies against. So if I were to make it against this, I would actually take the virus and I would inject that into, you know, I'd probably just take the spike protein, wouldn't put the whole live virus in, but I'd take the spike protein and inject that into mice. Mice would make antibodies to it. And then you test the mice, you identify the ones with the antibodies, and then you go and harvest the spleen from the mice, which has all their antibody-producing cells. You actually fuse those cells with a cell line that they basically will grow forever in culture as long as you feed it, and then you do selection, so the only thing that ends up growing is a hybrid that's got a mixture of the cell line as well as the spleen cells.
Okay.
And you do selection, so those grow out, and then you go, you screen them for the antibodies they make. And then the ones you identify, you can basically grow forever. So you basically have kind of an antibody factory. You've got a cell line that makes a given antibody. The antibody has the properties you're interested in. And then as long as you feed that cell line, it'll continue to double. It'll double every 24 hours or so. And so, you know, in a relatively short time period, you can have as much antibody as you want, you know, as long as you have the space for the cells to grow, and you harvest the antibody that's secreted by the cells. You basically have an antibody factory, and so you can make unlimited amounts of antibodies from that individual cell line. So that's essentially what they did. They didn't do it that simply. They went and screened for cells from the patient that was making the neutralizing antibody, and then they took the genes from those cells, and they put those together with a human antibody gene, and kind of reconstructed the monoclonal antibody so it would grow well in culture and they could make unlimited amounts of it. And they ended up screening, you know, several hundred candidates, and I think they ended up with 19. And of the 19, they kind of mapped where they bind. They all bind on the spike protein. And some of them bind on the receptor binding domain. And anyway, they did the characterizations of them, and they were very pleased with what they had. They thought the potential was very good, that these antibodies would neutralize the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And they did work in culture as far as inhibiting the virus with the type of experiment I described initially, where they take that monoclonal antibody and mix it with the virus, and then see how well the virus is able to infect.
How would you go about cutting off one of the spike proteins and using that? That's some pretty sophisticated stuff, isn't it?
No, that's what I used to do all the time. I used to grow viruses and separate out all the proteins, and you use physiochemical.
You had some very small scissors. And, I get it.
Actually, like I said this a few other times, that I would grow a lot of virus. There would be enough virus. You could see the virus with the naked eye. I mean, there was enough.
That's a lot of virus.
You could see it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't an invisible enemy. It was very, very visible. It kind of banded right at a density of 1.16 and on a sucrose gradient. And it was all very doable. You could actually see the virus, and then you would separate out all the proteins, and you'd put those on other types. It's all pretty straightforward stuff. If you got the centrifuges and you got the ways to visualize the virus and you got radioactive labels you can put on it and you can count the radioactivity in individual tubes. He could do all that stuff. But I was doing that stuff back in the 70s. So, I mean, that was a long time ago. And so things are even more sophisticated today. And so I identify, you know, separating out the spike protein is it's not a major challenge. And, and the stuff I told you about all was done with the protein itself. Everything done now is done at, you know, isolating the spike gene and then putting it into an expression system and producing it. It's all cookbook stuff. There's nothing, there's nothing new, no new technology to do all this. This technology has been around for 50 years, and it's all very doable. And theirs was a little more sophisticated because, like I said, they didn't just take the cells, the hybrid cells. They went in and got the antibody genes and kind of stitched them together with different combinations so that they could grow a lot of it in culture. But conceptually, it's still the same thing. It's basically to set it up so you have a source that'll make as much of the antibody as you want. And then you, each cell is making a different antibody. So you can kind of do some mixing and matching. And so they were seeing which antibodies map to what portion of the spike protein. And how well they neutralized, and they could conceivably end up using a cocktail where you take three or four different antibodies and use that as a treatment, and they each represent targeting a different area of the spike protein. So they think that if they put this combination together, they can inhibit the ability of the virus to get inside cells and to grow, and therefore if somebody actually has, you know, an infection, then kind of just like convalescent anacera, that they basically collect blood from patients that have recovered to get neutralizing antibodies. You don't have to keep identifying new patients and getting blood from them and using that as a treatment. You would have the monoclonal antibody that you could grow up as much as you want in the laboratory and put it in little vials and ship it out. And people would, you know, if they have a patient, they would just take the vial of antibody and give them an injection of the antibodies, and they would go in and target the virus and keep the virus from growing, and that would allow the patient to recover. So it's kind of convalescent antibodies, but you don't have to keep on getting new patients and new antibodies. Yeah, you could grow it and send it out. So that was the new development on the research front. And, you know, the situation with the virus, is kind of the same. You know, Trump did say it'll get worse before it gets better.
Are the masks making any, are the masks making any noticeable difference in the statistics as you can read them? Is it slowing anything? What's the suggestion here? Since most people are wearing masks now, are we seeing anything?
Well, generally, the idea of the mask is you're gonna slow down the transmission in the population
person to person, H to H.
Right. And that's gonna take a little bit of time, and you know, right now, just as you mentioned in that headline, that most people get infected by family members. So, you know, if the virus is already in the house, so to speak, you know, wear a mask outside, is it going to help? You're already being exposed to it. And so, the mask is kind of more of a longer term proposition, and and the Northeast is the, you know, is the example that it did work in the United States, that, you know, people did wear masks in the Northeast, and they did, you know, travel was limited to essential workers, and traffic was way down. And it's a little tricky now because you don't have a bunch of things working simultaneously. You know, right now, just looking at cell phones, et cetera, you can kind of track traffic and movement, and you can look at traffic patterns. I mean, I can see it here in Pittsburgh. The back when the lockdown was there, the streets were pretty empty. And now the streets are pretty full. I mean, you go, you know, to areas that had congested traffic, and they've got congested traffic again. So it's easy to just go out on the road and see that there's a lot more people out and about now than there were, you know, 6 weeks ago or whatever, back in April, a couple of months ago now. So that it's all a combination, you know, how much people are out and about, and how many are wearing the masks, and how many opportunities there are to get infected, even though you do have the mask. The masks aren't 100%. They're designed to knock it down. It's not like everybody's right. Got N95 masks, you know. So, right. So it's far from ideal, but it's better than no mask. And I can look at Pittsburgh and look at the areas that have higher concentrations of virus. And if you were to ask me if I thought that area would have more or fewer masks, I would say they would have fewer masks, just knowing, you know, who's in the various neighborhoods. So I think there's even a difference in incidence as to who's more likely to be wearing masks and who isn't. If I just look in what areas of Pittsburgh have the highest concentration of the virus. But that's what the problem is. I mean, the problem is there are areas that aren't wearing masks. And actually there was a model that was just presented, and that kind of addresses your question. And it compared what would happen if the last lockdown was across the board when there are multiple outbreaks. And so the ones that have, you know, a lot of virus and the outbreak is really roaring, and the other areas have a lower level of an outbreak. And if everybody gets locked out at the same time, the virus gets under control much earlier, and it gets under control in all the places, whether they had the high virus or the low virus. If you basically do the lockdowns on a location by location basis, and you only do the high ones initially and you don't do the low ones, and then when the low ones start going high, you put the lockdown on, and when the higher ones start going low, you take the lockdown off, that you can get it under control, but it takes a lot longer and a lot more people get infected. And that's kind of what you got in the United States right now. You got some places that are saying you got to wear a mask. You got some places where they say you got to wear a mask, and the government and the governor says no, you don't, and they're arguing over that. And the compliance levels are all over the place. And then some people, you know, are just thinking, well, we can just have house parties and have get-togethers as long as we're not public and nobody's going to know, type of a thing.
Crazy. Yeah.
And so to see an effect and be able to know that it's down and it's down because of the mass, you know, it's hard to see that over a short time period. And I don't know what the compliance is. Like I said, there's a couple areas in Pittsburgh that have high levels, and I'd say, well, I bet you they don't wear many masks there. And I think if I went there, I would be able to count people and confirm what my suspicions are.
So all right.
There's a lot of variables out there. So it's very uneven. So when it's very uneven, it's not going to work real well. The countries that got it out of control, under control, had good compliance. The mask is not that controversial in places outside of the U.S. That it's really not that big a deal that you got a virus and the mask can help and the virus
I understand.
Is something
well,
you don't want to get.
I mentioned that back in January, so I agree. All right.
Yeah.
We'll wrap it up for tonight. Thank you. I'll keep watching. Trump is supposed to do another briefing tomorrow. Do we know?
I don't know. I mean, they were bouncing around on whether he was doing one today. Initially, he said he wasn't. He might do it on something else, and then they all of a sudden said he was. So my guess is he probably will, but he isn't really saying that much at the briefing. He didn't say that much today. He said more yesterday. Okay. Talk. Yeah. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. All right. Okay. Sorry about the technical issues at the bottom of the last hour. We'll try and figure that out. Take care. Keep doing your protocols. We'll talk to you tomorrow night.